The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra.
Football Weekly Extra. Football confirmed as Boulevard of Broken Dreams, Wednesday's Europa League final, bringing heartache for Fulham, with little Lily Allen in tears. Happy now at Atletico Madrid. The pod salutes the brave cottagers and gets the view from Spain, where 40,000 mad Atleti fans piled into a fountain. Elsewhere, we count down to those dramatic final days in the Liga and Serie A, and we bring you the World Cup squads in full, with England seized by a latest injury scare. JT may be fit. There's posts for functory FA Cup final preview, plus all the fun of the playoffs, with the worst spot kick since the one I took in Vienna, and superstar DJ turns tables on Forest. All of that in today's Football Weekly Extra. On board today, Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hello there, Barry.
How are you?
I'm very well. And John Ashes Ashdown.
Hello again.
So, which other city has three teams in the Champions League?
I believe it's Athens, although there seems to be a certain amount of controversy about this.
Yeah, Monios was the first one to post in with Athens, so well done to you all. Then Marker immediately responds, Olympiacos are not from Athens, they're from Piraeus.
If you look at it on Google Maps, it's a bit like Salford to Manchester, I think. That's the line I'm going for. It was the first thing I said when somebody told me this statet.
Oh, really?
I said, oh, no, Olympiacos.
And what did
Piraeus.
They say?
They
Google
said,
Map.
No, it's not. It's in Athens. And I went, oh, okay. Then I'll use that on the pod.
All right. Well, Jackson Fife says, what about Istanbul, Galatasaray, Besiktas and Fenerbahce? But they weren't all in the same competition, which was your question.
Yeah, that's my question.
Right. Okay. Sorry about that confusion, listeners. Europa League. What are you smiling about, Barry? Just the kind of football weekly
nature. Just the whole shambolic
nature
of the fact that about an hour after we'd finished recording on Monday and you'd gone home,
we
suddenly remembered that we'd forgotten to give the answer to that question, and then when we finally did on the comments section under the blog, it was wrong.
Right. Well, at least we got the question in, which is 50% of the way. Europa League.
Yes.
Good Lord. Fulham, brave Fulham, falling at the final hurdle, and brave Atletico, ending their 48 years of hurt, etc. Worthy team. Won the
they were the better side, yeah, for the large part. They've seemed to, both teams seem to be competing for who can be the bravest and pluckiest over the course of the 90 minutes, or the course of the whole season, really. I think Fulham probably just about won out on the night simply because Atletico were a better team, better footballing side.
Well, lots of love out there, lots of commiserations for Fulham, who remain everybody's second favourite team, even judging by Five's intro before the game. The second team of most Premier League managers, Barry.
Well, yeah, they filmed a few spots at the League Managers Association do on, I think it was on Monday night or Sunday, where they got several Premier League managers to record good wishes for Fulham, and quite a few of them seemed to be under the influence of alcohol when they did so, worrying their slurs and whatnot. So it's difficult to imagine they'd be voiced with the same sincerity if it was any other team in the final.
Because Fulham are still cuddly.
Well, they have been. They're certainly the most patronised team in England. They've taken over from Wigan in that respect. But, you know, it's unfortunate they didn't win the Europa League. But they can go out of it, you know, with their heads held high.
They certainly can. Mowgli84, though. One of those people asking why everyone fusses over them and not Borough with their similar road to the what was then the UEFA Cup final. He points out that, here's the comparison he makes. Steve McLaren, an English manager who took a mid-table overachieving team to a UEFA Cup final only to lose to a Spanish side. He was then named England manager after a summer after a World Cup. Roy Hodgson, an English manager who took a mid-table overachieving team to a Europa Cup final only to lose to a Spanish team. Fill in the rest yourselves. The parallels are many. They both play beside Rivers, Borough and Fulham, and they both feature Mark Schwarzer in goal. So why do we all love Fulham that much more, Raphael Honigstein?
Well, I think the manner that Middlesbrough lost that game has not been forgotten. They were absolutely destroyed. It was actually embarrassing. I was at the final, and it was one of the most one-sided, cruel spectacles I've seen for a while. And of course, Fulham beat bigger sides on the way, if memory serves correct. They really knocked out some really good sides, including the holders, of course, and including the German champions in Hamburg and Juventus. So, you know, it was a bit more romantic, I thought, than the Middlesbrough's commendable but ultimately doomed comebacks.
Well, painful look on Danny Murphy's face. I'm not sure if you...
That's his normal face.
That's his normal face. Right, okay. I mean, you would agree the best team won, probably, in Hamburg?
Yeah. I thought Fulham were actually better than I thought. They just lacked somebody up front. I mean, Zamora was obviously not fully fit, and then when he had to go off, then they really didn't have anyone, unfortunately, to do something with the possession that they had. I mean, they came out in the second half, and now in retrospect, people, even on, you know, on the television on Channel 5, have said, well, obviously from the second half onward, Atletico were the better side, but it's not true. I mean, Fulham actually came out really well and dominated the first 15-20 minutes of the second half. They just didn't create anything with the ball. And then, of course, in extra time, the better footballing side had a bit more.
Well, Hodgson was quite explicit about the fact they were hanging on for the penalties.
Yeah, I mean, he said that they should have deserved penalties, which is probably true, but I don't think the audience watching on television would have deserved another 20 minutes of Graham Taylor, because it was just unbearable.
What upset you so much about Graham's performance?
Well, he constantly sounds as if he's an old man battling tiredness and trying to stay awake.
Right, which can't is not think why the right, that would be.
But yeah, I don't know. It's not the right, not quite the right, I think, state of mind for a Europa League final. And it's just, I personally found it unbearable to listen to.
He has this little thing where he'll say, it's what I like to call, and then we'll come up with something that everybody uses. At one point, I'm sure he said, it's what I like to call possession football. They're not, and then he'll explain it, even though it's entirely obvious what it is.
He uses what I like to call cliché.
Exactly, yeah.
Right. He also loves to say, there is no doubt, there's absolutely no doubt that this is a corner.
I think it'd be very harsh on Graham Taylor. I think he's an excellent...
He's a super chap. Super chap.
Never met him.
Right. Well, he's often in and out of the big celebrity house which I, you know.
You still allowed to live there, are you?
Ah, chortle. Anyway.
Oh,
well,
no.
Yep.
I see you were on the One Show on Monday night.
That's true. I was briefly on the One Show before getting bumped by Giles Brandreth.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was due to make a sofa appearance next to Ronan Keating and the tattooed one out of Boyzone.
Shane Lynch.
That's the one. But sadly, Gordon Brown's decision to, resign, led to time getting tighter. So although I didn't make as much...
So Dominic Littlewood and Giles Brandreth got to make sofa appearances, but you were bumped.
Absolutely, Barry. Here's my open wound. Rub more salt in it.
It's like a conspiracy from the highest, like from Whitehall.
Right.
Gordon Brown resigned. You're being thwarted at every turn, Jimbo.
Exactly so. Exactly so. Now, back to the Europa League. The silver lining to Fulham's defeat is the fact that it must have been really annoying for Real Madrid. So let's get the reaction now from the Spanish capital with Sid Lowe.
Hello.
Hi, Sid.
Hello. How are you?
I'm very well. And how are you after a crazy night in Madrid?
Yeah, madness, really was. They reckon around about 40,000 Atletico Madrid fans went to Neptuno, which is the statue, the fountain, just down the road from Cibeles, where Real Madrid normally celebrate. Of course, it's a place where Atletico Madrid fans haven't been since 1996, and they went absolutely bonkers last night. I think when you see the reaction of the supporters, I think it's difficult not to feel pleased for them. When you look at Atletico Madrid, there's lots of reasons why you think, well, it's a little bit, kind of a bit of a joke almost that they've won the Europa League when you consider some of the people involved. But when you see the reaction of the fans, it's very hard not to feel quite pleased for them.
What, hang on, why would it be a joke, Sid?
Well, how about the fact that they've won two games in Europe this season?
Three now?
Three now? Well, yeah, okay, we're counting 90 minutes. I'm taking this from a bookie's point of view. I'm sure Sean Ingle will be proud of me. It counts as a draw last night, doesn't it, I think, from the bookie's point of view. But three times now in Europe, getting through on away goals time and time again, getting through by the skin of their teeth time and time again, a few refereeing decisions, dubious ones going their way, like, for example, the obvious penalty in the last minute not given against Valencia, the offside goal against Liverpool, for example. And also the fact that actually for most of this season, they've been a pretty terrible team. And this is a side that's lost 22 times this year, and yet they could well be on for a cup double. The Copa del Rey, of course, to come next week. And yet, at the same time, you know, it's been quite a ride. It's been quite good fun. And the fans have spent a long, long, long time basically watching their club fall apart. And it's fantastic for them, the way this has turned out.
Well, Marco, this morning with a riff on that advert you were telling us about before, Papa, why are we Atleti fans? And Papa, now I know why we're Atleti fans, the big headline on Marco.
I think that sums it up. I think that really sums it up, James, in that Marco gave it a wraparound cover, which normally is reserved for really big events, although this year, actually, Marco have done quite a lot of that for not particularly big events, like Guti playing his last game at the Bernabeu and stuff like that.
Real Madrid going to dinner? Did that get one?
Real Madrid's club dinner, did that get one? I don't know. There might have been a wraparound bike on the cover. I can't remember. And I think that, in a way, sums this up. It's been such a long time coming, this, that there has been a little bit of a sense of the whole country sort of supporting Atletico Madrid. Now, I think it's ever so slightly false. I'm sure if you asked a lot of Real Madrid fans, they would say they weren't supporting Atletico Madrid. But quite a lot of them were. And that's partly the patronising thing of Real Madrid fans almost looking down their nose at Atletico Madrid and, ha-ha, little brothers, haven't they been crap for the last 15 years? Wouldn't it be great if they win something now? They might feel rather differently if they don't win anything this season. Atletico Madrid go on and win a double. But there has been, I think, a very slight sense of most of the country actually wanting Atletico Madrid to win this.
Mm. Marca has, as its kind of little subheading, Golden Age of Spanish Sport. So this is seen as very much a Spanish triumph, yes?
That's been an ongoing thread in Marca for a while now, because, of course, you've got the Spanish basketball team. You've got Fernando Alonso, you've got Spanish tennis being very, very strong. You've got the Barcelona winning the Champions League last year, Spain being Euro 2008 champions. And Spanish sport is very, very strong at the moment. And what really has prompted that, of course, is Spain winning the European Championships 2 years ago, because there was always a feeling that that was the one thing that was missing in Spanish sport. And that's there now as well. And yes, this has been a big deal for them. I saw a comment earlier, I can't honestly remember who made it now, but talking about English football and saying, well, if you look at it, Sevilla slaughtered Middlesbrough, Barcelona slaughtered Manchester United in the final last year, Atletico Madrid have just now beaten Fulham, Liverpool were knocked out by Atletico Madrid, Arsenal were destroyed by Barcelona. I suppose the one team that hasn't destroyed an English team of late is Real Madrid, because they keep getting knocked out at the same stage. But there was a sort of sense of, okay, this shows surely that the Spanish league is still strong. Now, I've argued lots of times that I think the Spanish league this year has been pretty weak, but this is definitely a step in the right direction from the Spanish point of view. Of course it is.
Sid, tell us about the weekend. Real Madrid still a point behind Barcelona. They need to win. They need Barcelona not to win. They're both playing relegation battlers. Off you go.
Yeah, it's a weekend where everything is kind of interlinked and tied up. And I was looking at this and thinking, this is a little bit like David Cameron and Nick Clegg kind of coming together to go to Downing Street. It's like two people who probably don't much like each other pretending to be best mates. And the reason I say that is that Real Madrid's future, Real Madrid's destiny in terms of the title, is in the hands of Javier Clemente. And they absolutely hate Clemente, but they spent the whole week like a drunk in a bar going, hey, you're my best mate, you are. Really, no, please. These beat Barcelona for us, because Real Madrid and Barcelona go into this final weekend. Barcelona are a point clear plus head-to-head goal difference. Barcelona, if they win against Valladolid, who are, of course, coached by Javier Clemente, will win the league regardless of what Real Madrid do. Real Madrid need to win against Malaga, and then they need Barcelona to drop points, so it's down to that. But those two teams that they're playing, Malaga and Valladolid, are also fighting for their lives in a real battle at the bottom. Five teams could go down. One of them, Jerez, on 33 points. The other four, all of them on 36 points. And this is how confusing it is, and I absolutely love this. The Spanish league says that Malaga are 18th and relegated. According to the Spanish Football Federation website, Malaga are 17th and safe. So I think we're going to have to try and work out what it is. The Spanish League one, I think, is right, because what happens at the end of the season is that if all teams finish level, which they currently are, those four, Malaga, Tenerife, Racing and Valladolid, then it comes down to what's essentially a mini-league of the results between those teams.
Wow.
And that is where Malaga would not be safe, but the Federation for some reason thinks they would be. It's the first time since 1983 that three relegation places and the championship have been up for grabs on the final day. Add to that the fact that both Europa League spots are still up for grabs, and one of the two Champions League spots is still up for grabs. And we're going to have a weekend where it's everyone's sort of depending on everyone else, and everyone's waiting to see. But what it has done, of course, as always in Spain, create massive, massive suspicion around all the games about what the incentives may be for certain teams to win or not win, in particular in Santander.
Oh, that's interesting. Barry, sounds the sort of thing you might get indignant about.
Oh, heaven forbid, no.
Right. We're kind of out of time. Just to say that fourth place then is between Sevilla, who are 1 point ahead of Mallorca. Well, it's between Sevilla and Mallorca, and Sevilla 1 point ahead. Sounds like it's going to be a rip-roaring final round, and even sweatier than usual.
There's one very quickly, I know you're running out of time, but I've just got to tell you this one. Sevilla against Mallorca. There's a big question mark about this one, because Sevilla and Mallorca going for a Champions League place. The Mallorca coach currently is Gregorio Manzano. Suspicions are that Manzano is going to Sevilla next year, so surely it's in his interest for his current club not to get the Champions League club place, so that when he goes to his new club, they have got a Champions League place.
Crikey, Sid. We look forward to having an extended report from you on Monday on how it all pans out.
I hope so. Speak to them.
Many thanks, Sid. That's very much it for part one. Coming up in a moment, we start our look at the midweek action in England, the Championship playoffs.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
Championship playoffs then, everybody. Best footballing performance of the week, Blackpool.
Oh, it was superb. They went to Nottingham Forest and won 4-3. The fourth time they've been in Forest this season. And the first away team to win at the City Ground since September. And they did it in real style.
Yeah. Is that what it was then? Because there's this stat about Forest not conceding any goals at home for 12 hours and then they dropped four in one half. Was it just that nobody's really come and thrust it down their throats, footballing-wise?
Good God.
Before the brave tangerine folk?
I think teams just haven't been able to, because really? Forest have been in great form for much of the season, and they have been very, very, very solid at home. But the fact that I think the pressure of the situation got to Forest to a certain extent. Once it was, once they were behind by a goal on aggregate, obviously they were pushing forward, and then Blackpool were able to hit them on the break. And it's a sort of trend for Forest. I think it's the third time on the bounce that they've been hammered in playoff semi playoff games. They lost 5-2 to Yeovil a few years ago in the League One playoffs, and were beaten 4-3 at Bramall Lane in the last time they were in the Championship playoffs as well. So it is a bit of a trend for them. I think their worry going into the summer is holding on to Billy Davies, who apparently has been linked with Celtic.
Be a worry for Davies too, perhaps. DJ Campbell, though, let's have a few words about him, Barry.
He was excellent. He got a hat trick. People might remember him. He used to play for Brentford, and then he scored two against Sunderland in a cup match. Ended up being signed by Birmingham, and then he went to Leicester. And Holloway is obviously taken. He's still at Leicester. Holloway took him on loan to Blackpool. So if Leicester had won the other semi final, he wouldn't be able to play. And he actually said after the game that he hoped Leicester would lose, which was rather a foolish thing to say, considering they're actually the club he plays for.
Yeah.
But it was a marvellous match. The only thing I'm a bit sad about is that Ian Holloway seems to have been neutered by the press, or a self-imposed neutering. He was interviewed afterwards. He's normally great fun. He's got really interesting take on life, and comes out with some gems in post-match and pre-match quotes. But he's been very careful now, because he said that when he was out of a job for a year after being sacked by Leicester, he got the impression that people thought he was a bit of a joker who didn't take football seriously.
Well, speaking of someone whose sofa he came and sat on in that year, it wasn't an impression that he did anything to dispel, quite the opposite. But yeah, it was interesting that he seems to now regard this joker tag as patronising.
Yeah, and which is a shame, because his interviews are getting more and more bland, which, you know, that's not what people want to hear. And he is obviously a very good manager. His team, Blackpool, play marvellous football. They've got Charlie 4-3-3, Charlie Adam in the middle of midfield pulling the strings. And Holloway's philosophy, he basically said that in his year out, I got sick of watching teams setting themselves up not to lose a match or not to concede a goal. One striker up front, I hate that. It's not what football should be about. So while he says, you know, obviously you have to concentrate and defend, and you have to give yourself a chance to win by scoring goals, and Blackpool score plenty of them.
Indeed. Well, through they go, and DJ very much saved their life. yeah, it's come to that. on Tuesday, and they don't face Leicester, they face Cardiff after their penalty shootout victory over Leicester. Tough, tough game this, hard to shake images of the shootout aftermath, players distraught, sobbing openly on the turf. It's quite traumatic, quite upsetting, John.
It was, after such a great game. And these playoff games often throw up some really fantastic matches. And this week was another. Well, there's another two. Leicester romped into a 3-1 lead down in Cardiff, which would be enough to put them through. Cardiff pulled on back from the spot to make it 2-3 on the night, 3-3 on aggregate, and it ended up going to penalties. And Cardiff knocked in all four of theirs. And then there was an atrocious penalty from Jan Kermorgant, the French striker.
Not sure that's strictly how it's pronounced, but...
Kermorgant, That's probably how a Cardiff fan would pronounce it.
Tell us about the penalty.
It was at 3-3, Leicester were taking first, and he attempted the sort of Panenka, cool-as-you-like type penalty, but just didn't get it high enough. So even though the goalkeeper had gone down to one side, he was still able just to basically sit up and catch the ball. He trudged back to the halfway line. And usually you see teammates coming and putting a comforting arm around a player's shoulder, but he was just left entirely on his own. Even sort of afterwards, I don't think many people were coming up to comfort him. Yeah. And the player who needed the most comfort was young Martin Waghorn, who took the last penalty for Leicester, and it was saved by David Marshall. And he just completely broke down flat on the turf in the penalty area. Cardiff's celebratory sort of charge towards the goalkeeper, actually the path of that went entirely over his body, so I think a few players were worried that he'd got trampled on.
I think Mark Kennedy was
I think it might
attending
been, yeah.
to him
well possibly. No, his body, like, he was convulsing with such was the intensity of his grief. And Mark Kennedy appears to have morphed into Mother Teresa of Calcutta, because he was going around to various Leicester players sympathising with them, and in his post-match interview he was very sympathetic towards Leicester's players. So that was nice to see. I wasn't expecting that from him.
It's sort of the Luther Mateus touch, I always like to think. Yeah. There were wild celebrations from the Blackpool fans, but you have to worry a bit because there's still the big game to come. And a long way, 90 minutes at least of football before they can claim their place in the Premier League. We shall see. As you were saying, playoff games are often terrific fun. Can we expect a similar level of entertainment from the League One playoffs? John Ashton.
Well, if the form's anything to go by, we can, because all four teams in there are bang in it.
Those four teams, John?
Being Millwall, Huddersfield, Charlton and Swindon. The first legs are on the weekend, Saturday, I think, and Sunday.
Friday and Saturday.
And then the following Tuesday, Wednesday, the second legs. I'm hoping for a Millwall victory, because I'm down in Millwall covering the second leg of their game against Huddersfield.
You don't want to be at Millwall when they lose, something like that?
Well, I think my accent's just about still northern enough to pass as a Huddersfield one,
right?
For sort of southerners who don't know any better,
right?
And so if I'm sort of asking, I wouldn't go up to somebody if they'd lost. I wouldn't sort of be wandering around Southland saying, "Can you tell me where Tube Station is, please, mate?"
Right?
Because I would get the.
Is that not insensitive posting on the part of the Guardian kind of manpower?
I don't know. I don't know what I've done to Mike Adamson, who's in charge of these things, but.
You also look like you might be from Huddersfield.
What do Huddersfield people look like, Barry?
You.
Does it get any more in-depth than that?
Swindon aren't exactly banging form. In their last six games, they've lost two, drawn three, and won one.
I think over the last sort of two or three months, I'm looking at that, then they're reasonably in form. When often you get teams stumbling into the playoffs, having dropped out the top two, I don't think any of them are particularly stumbling.
Who would you like to see go up and why?
Any of them, really. I don't have a huge feeling for any of them.
Okay, interesting. Of course, Leeds and Norwich are already up from League One.
I'll tell you what, Charlton, just because it would make Producer Pete happy.
Ah, oh, Producer Pete. There you go. In the meantime, over in sunny Italy, final day of the season approaches. Title race still to be decided. Inter 2 points clear. They are at Siena. Roma visit Chievo, who ran Inter very close last week. Inter at Siena. Pietro Mezzaroma, the Siena owner, offered his players a bonus if they beat Inter. That's all right, isn't it, Barry? He's a Roma fan.
Let me get one thing straight. Yeah. I have no problem with people in Italy arranging match results before the matches are played,
right,
as long as I'm in on it from the get-go.
Right, well,
I can get my money down early.
In other news, the battle for fourth has Sampdoria after their draw at Palermo last week. 2 points clear of the Sicilians. Sampdoria hosting Napoli. Palermo will be at Atalanta, who are now mathematically relegated. Palermo, though, without Fabrizio Miccoli, who could be out for up to 6 months, poor chap. In other news, Totti after kicking Balotelli 4-game ban, this being Italy, that only applies in the Coppa Italia. But he did give his explanation, his motivation for that wild chop he aimed at the young Italian. He said, Balotelli called me grandpa. So there you go. He said there was absolutely no way that he used a racist epithet. He did swear at him, but he explained he called me grandpa. Totti isn't in the Italy squad. That was one of the big questions about Marcello Lippi's, what do you call it? The preliminary selection, the 30. There's actually quite a few young players in there because we thought it might just be 2006 all over again. But there's 10 of the old stages in there. No Totti, none of the controversial players, Cassano, Balotelli. Well, Michele was injured anyway. And lots of youngish players. So it'll be interesting. There is the potential for a little bit of freshness. Let's have a look at one or two other posts before we attack part three. Meerkat United FC wants to have in a save of the season. Gomez against Arsenal is his suggestion. Player we all thought was rubbish but turned out to be good this season. Clearly,
Bobby Zamora.
He also mentions Barry Ferguson. Yeah. Flop of the season, Benzema, Kaká, Kitson, Aquila. Kitson hasn't been flop of the season, has he?
You have to have some expectation to be a flop, don't
right.
you?
Right, yeah.
Kitson was responsible also for the volcano in Iceland.
That's true, that's true.
and the Tory government.
But Aquilani, Joni Lescott and Toure. There you go. Speaking of Toure, Magrorian McStay says he's heard things about Yaya Toure coming to Arsenal. This would infuriate Wenger, of course, as he had the chance to sign this player when he was a youngster and now he'd have to pay money. Does the pod know of any other stories like this? His personal favourite is Ronaldinho, very nearly playing for St Mirren until some passport hitch came up and it was never chased up by the Paisley team. Can this be?
Seems slightly dubious.
It does ring faint bells, but...
Urban legend.
Apocryphal. Equally, the Como president, or the Enrico Preziosi, who is now president of Como, of Genoa, but used to be president of Como back in the days when they were the worst top division team in the history of Italian football, claims that he had the chance to sign Leo Messi back in those days and didn't. That would have been quite an easy fit, Como and Leo Messi.
There is actually a good one as well, James. This is Franz Beckenbauer. As a youngster, playing with his local team against 1860, the best and biggest club in Munich at the time. But he was slapped by an opponent and then decided, that's it, I'm not going to this club, and he went to Bayern Munich instead.
Wow.
Sheffield United turned down Maradona in the early 80s.
No.
Yeah, I think they'd been on a pre-season tour of Argentina and had seen this youthful young Tyro. And the team, I can't remember who he was playing for now, but they wanted £150,000 for him.
Right.
And we would only stretch sort of 100. And so we bought Alex Sabella instead.
Right. How did that work out for you?
He was all right, but he wasn't Maradona.
Indeed not. Kongrone says, is anybody else looking forward to hearing Steve McLaren's faux German accent once he takes over at Wolfsburg? What awaits Steve McLaren at Wolfsburg? Raphael Honig.
I love the German fake accent. Yes. Personally, yes.
Yes, you do. What about that appointment? Did it surprise you? Are Wolfsburg, are there 40,000 fans in fountains in the streets about it? What's the
Not
feeling?
Not yet.
Not yet.
And it does rain a little bit there as well. I think it's a really interesting choice on both on behalf of McLaren and also for Wolfsburg, because there's never been an English manager in the Bundesliga before. Be interesting to see what he does with the language. I think with the players, it won't be too much of a problem speaking English. But vis-a-vis the media, that should be very, very interesting, because they do expect, and poor Giovanni Trapattoni can write a whole book about this, they do expect managers eventually to speak the language of the host country. And I think it would be very, very interesting. But it's a very good move for him because, from what I understand, he's on serious money, €3 million a year. And he'll have vast resources available, possibly inflated even further by the sale of Edin Dzeko to a certain Premier League club wearing blue.
More German topics coming up in a second or two when we have a look at World Cup preliminary squads in general. World Cup contenders across the globe have been announcing their preliminary squads. StugB22 says, can we get Raphael's views on the German World Cup squad? A bit of a dilemma, he suggests, the underperforming strikers. Eh? Who will start, and has the managerial situation been resolved yet? Also, what about Mesut Ozil? Does he have a chance of making the German first team?
Mesut Ozil has a very good chance of making the German first team. I'd be very surprised if he weren't to start against Australia on June 13th.
Right.
And it's interesting because after the defeat by Argentina in March in Munich, the mood was very, very negative and people thought, oh, you know, we might not as well go there. It's going to be a disaster. Now, because Bayern have done well and have done well with lots of German players, lots of whom have now been called up. For example, Holger Badstuber, the young centre-back, and also Thomas Müller, the very versatile attacker. There is a feeling that, you know, if Bayern can do it with these guys, why not Germany? And the mood has shifted, and it's very optimistic now, very, very positive. And apart from René Adler, who would have been first-choice keeper for Jogi Löw, who unfortunately needs to have a rib injury, there aren't also any big losses or oversights or huge controversies. The one name, of course, that was being talked about was Kevin Kurani. But I think most people have bought Jogi Löw's explanation that he has very similar strikers already and he doesn't need that type of strike on top of it, even though he has scored, whereas Klose and Podolski both haven't.
Mm.
But one very funny discussion right now is about Podolski, who's had a fantastically bad season. And now Uli Stein, the former Germany keeper, has said, I've talked to a lot of his managers and they've all confirmed he's the laziest player they've ever seen. He doesn't train, he doesn't do anything, which sort of confirms the suspicion that most people have had about him for a long time, that he's just a guy who just doesn't bother training. There, Udo Lattek, the former Bayern manager, recently came out with a good line. He said, how do you know it's Thursday in Cologne? Podolski turns up for training for the first time in a week.
Ooh, it's a bit strong. Yeah. Now, in other World Cup squad news, Brazil, Dunga left Ronaldinho out, Pato out, Adriano as well, which is a bit of a surprise, but apparently he thinks he's bad influence. Can't imagine why Adriano might be.
What is he on about, Dunga? What is he on? I mean,
yes, we're going to get an in-depth view on the whole Brazil squad on Monday, I think, when Fernando Duarte...
I can give you one now.
Go on then, Barry.
Well, Grafite, Wolfsburg's striker, he found out he was in the team from his dog, Zico, the dog. He was... they were announced in the team and he thought he had it in his head that he wasn't going to make the cut.
Right.
So he was mooching around out in his back garden because he didn't want to watch it on TV. His dog came out, started barking, doing that lassie thing, you know, there's a boy, small boy trapped down the well, come follow me.
Right.
So he went in and all his family were on their knees praying in the living room because his name was there on the screen.
That's amazing. What happened to the boy down the well then?
He's dead.
Oh. Barry! That's awful.
It's
say
an
you're
imaginary
joking.
Boy down an imaginary well.
Right.
You can't be offended by jokes about imaginary children down imaginary wells. That's just taking political correctness or whatever it is.
All right. Well, anyway, we're going to speak to Fernando about that next week. We'll also, I hope, be dialing up our friend Joel in Buenos Aires to explain the extraordinary... I would call it extraordinary Argentina squad that Diego Maradona has assembled. Who would have thought when Capello came in with all his brave words and fighting talk that it would have come to this, him chasing Scholesi and Carragher? Yeah.
It was quite interesting how this whole thing unraveled, basically. On Monday, there was a leak to the press that Owen Hargreaves and Bobby Zamora were going to be in the squad, and every single national paper in the UK said that Hargreaves and Zamora would be in the squad, and then the squad was announced early to cover this news about the Capello, bury the news about the Capello index, and they weren't in it. So all the reporters who had been made to look stupid got the hump, and then the following day there was all these headlines that Capello's lost his marbles and his squad is very full of surprises. I don't think it's full of surprises at all.
Rafael, what's your view?
My view is that nobody does mock outrage better than the English press. I was there at the launch on Monday of the Capello Index.
Ah,
it was
good.
So innocuous.
Just explain about the Capello Index a bit for anyone who's not had the benefit of outraged headlines.
it's if you know any other stats system like Opta or Actim, it's basically a way to measure a player's performance. And Capello has worked with some other people and said, okay, we'll take this, but I've also got some ideas of how a player should be evaluated.
Did he actually contribute stuff himself, or is he just lending his name?
No, he did contribute. They were working on this for 2 years, and he did identify specific events that he felt were very important. And then he said, I think his new idea compared to what's out there is that it really depends where it happens on the pitch. So they divided the pitch into certain squares, and he said, if you make a block there, it's much more important than playing a back pass over 50 yards back to the keeper. It's that kind of stuff. And the idea was, you know, just to start that during the World Cup, and then every World Cup match would afterwards you'd have a certain number and say, okay, today Gerrard's number was 58 and Rooney's was 59 or whatever. And, and somehow it was made out as if Capello was personally rating players after matches.
No, but an index system bearing his name, which apparently, according to you, he has quite a lot of involvement with, will be rating his players and adversaries as well, which does seem very inopportune in the middle of a World Cup. I mean, to me, it does. It seems,
but it's just a number. It's just.
But the thing is, players are obsessed with those numbers. Footballers are absolutely obsessed with their rating out of 10. And if they knew how little care was put into the distribution of those ratings, it's a real afterthought. You know, a reporter who's already harassed or whatever, frazzled from trying to do a runner at a match, is asked, and he just goes down the phone 6-4.
Right, I mean, presumably that's not what Capello's doing, but it just seems like for $6 million a year, he could avoid publishing his personal or his index of who's doing well and who's not doing well. I'm not saying he shouldn't
I do agree with you that it's probably inappropriate, but the huge deal that was made out of it by the English press was just laughable.
All right, well, a huge deal was also made out of Jamie Carragher's return to the England squad, for now at least. Is it worth all the fuss, John?
Is it worth the fuss that people have made of it, or worth the fuss that Capello went to get
both,
him back?
Because
he asked him back in sort of 2008, I think. And
well, no, that was one thing, actually, I wanted to mention. I remember this business before England's ill-fated final qualifiers for the European Championships, and Carragher then saying that he didn't want to return. And arguably then he might have made a difference, chose not to help out the national team, which is his decision. Now, after a much, much worse season than the one he'd enjoyed then, he is returning, which is kind of curious. And James Dart from The Guardian was mentioning some of the quotes from his autobiography about how little or how low a priority he put on England England games.
Yeah, I don't think that means he doesn't care or try when he's playing for England, though. He just cares more about how he gets on with Liverpool.
Right.
So I think it's disingenuous to suggest he doesn't put in a good effort or a good shift when he's playing for England. I'm just not sure how good a shift he's capable of putting in anymore.
Right.
And I think the manner in which Capello was chasing him and Scholes is a sort of a damning indictment and a bit insulting to younger, better players. Well, not necessarily in this.
Were there alternatives then?
I think so. I think he could have called up Phil Jagielka. He could have got Gary Cahill from Bolton. Roger Johnson at Birmingham's had a better season this season than Jamie Carragher.
Well, there you go. Now, cup finals coming up this weekend. Gandhi says, can we get some shout-outs for Ross County for this Saturday in the Scottish Cup final? The Highlands will be empty.
Aren't the Highlands generally quite empty?
Well, that's the point, I think. No, but anyway, Ross County. Producer Pete, who are they playing? They're playing Dundee United.
I saw Ross County's semi-final against Celtic, and they were really good. They totally deserved to win. And, you know, underdogs, everyone would probably be rooting for them. I think their usual fan base probably wouldn't fill a corner of Hampden Park. But if, as you say, all the Highlanders are coming down and with their sheep in front of them and whatnot, then they'll hopefully fill up the stadium and have a good crowd and a good atmosphere.
Mm, they'll be flocking in, quite literally. Woo-hoo.
I thought the point about Highlanders is that there can only be one.
Meantime, the FA Cup at Wembley, seen as a bit of, it's not really whipped up the same levels of enthusiasm as you might expect, possibly because it's seen as a bit of a formality, you know, with little Portsmouth up against freshly crowned league champions Chelsea. Although Spurs, of course, thought their semi with Pompey was going to be a bit of a stroll in the park, and it wasn't. Is there any way, any chance that Avram Grant's brave boys in what must surely be the last game of this Portsmouth, if they can pull another rabbit out of the hat,
Of course, there's a slim chance, but you get the sense that they had the big game for them was that semi-final, and they might have left too much on the pitch. Well, what there is of a Wembley pitch,
yeah.
In that game. I suppose that you could make a case for Chelsea being slightly complacent.
Yeah.
But they certainly weren't complacent against Wigan on the final day, were they?
I think Portsmouth could make a game
keep
of it.
Keep it single figures, yeah.
No, I will be putting a small amount of money on Portsmouth to win that game.
Right. Interesting. They will, it now appears, have Aruna Dindan in their lineup, and possibly also Jamie O'Hara, despite the fact he's got a double fracture of his lower back. That can't be medically sound. Will Avram get his revenge then on the ungrateful Blues? We can only wait for Saturday to find out, but we will be back to talk about all of that and much, much more next Monday in Football Weekly. Many thanks to Raphael Honigstein and to Barry Glendening and John Ashton and to producer Pete and above all you, the listener. And we'll be back on Monday. Have a super weekend. Bye for now.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.